Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. No, the microphone was actually live right there, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. But that's okay. We're just having fun. Welcome back, folks, to the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do, once in a while, entertain commentary from our audio engineer, who's extremely attractive, by the way. All right, so we'll get right to it, I suppose. Biggest news this week, I think, was that Pastor Bob Enyart and Tommy Still spent better part of the week working on the Great Flood Hydroplate Theory video derived from Pastor Bob's seminar, along with, of course, the groundbreaking work of Walter Brown in his book. In the beginning, I hope to be on the list to get a preview. In fact, that's why I'm putting this plug in the show, hoping Bob and Tommy will listen and that they'll send me a They'll send me the galleys, so to speak, of the video before anyone else gets to see it. I'd like to preview it. That was definitely the biggest news of the week. Biggest fun of the week, best time of the week, was had down at Denver University, known locally as Duh, where the Central City Opera sponsored the interfaith panel on the death penalty there at the right there on the campus of Denver University in their law school. I personally have never darkened the door of a university except to do entertainment. And had a great time. Yeah, I mean, just like most of the kids at the university, I was there purely for entertainment reasons. But also to try and teach people about the death penalty. That was on the panel with a priest, a rabbi, and a hippie Indian type. Half Jehovah's Witness, half Native American shaman. Interesting fellow. And to the Buddhist in the audience, there was a Buddhist in the audience. He was offended that there was no representation of the Buddhist faith. He was also offended that I maintained that if you are simultaneously pro-abortion and anti-death penalty, that you are mentally ill. He was quite offended by that. So I just, I don't want to apologize to him for that. And I suppose I'll leave it to the Central City Opera and the faculty there at Duh Law School to apologize for the lack of any Buddhist representation. But anyway, I was there on the dais with the rest of the interfaith panel. And it was funny because whenever the lawyers and the law students in the audience would ask questions directed at either the priest, the rabbi, or me, the fundamentalist. I think I was the fundamentalist. Whenever they would direct a question at us, they would say, "This question is for the theologians." And then I was actually referred to as a theologian by one young law student in the audience. So I think to most lawyers and law students, if you can find a couple of Bible verses without referring to Google, they consider you a theologian. And I was able to do that without referring to Google. I was able to stumble around and find enough Bible verses to defend my position that the death penalty is necessary. It's the foundation of all human government and any justice system that's going to function properly, and that the death penalty was never repealed by God as it was instituted back in the book of Genesis and then reiterated, as so many things were, in the book of Deuteronomy. So I was really pleased. Will Duffy, who was in the crowd, he tweeted afterward that I was the only person on the panel, priest, rabbi, fundamentalist, and a hippie Native American shaman. I was the only person who actually quoted the Bible. And I hadn't really noticed that, but in retrospect, he's absolutely right. So, I guess that passes for a theologian these days, and I will accept the moniker of theologian. Although I would say that I'm an amateur theologian, but even an amateur theologian should know that the death penalty is important. It's not just suggested by God, it's commanded by God to be the foundation of a justice system. And well, allegedly, they videotaped the whole thing. I recorded it on my phone. I don't know how good the audio is But I passed that on to some friends over at KGOV just today at lunch. We'll see how good that audio is. I guess we want to make it available. There's a couple parts I want to edit out where I got a bit pugnacious. I have a tendency to be combative. And it really, I felt like in that room, I felt the full court press attack against the death penalty by so-called religious leaders. Now, the lawyers and the heathens and the ignorant students, I could understand them being ignorant about the death penalty. But with the priest and the rabbi and the Indian shaman, and there was a Lutheran there, and there was a, what was the one lady? Well, I can't remember the name of her religion. It's a really long, silly name. Universalist, reconciliationist, oneness universalist, something like that. Anyway, they were all quite offended by me, and I felt like I did my job. So a good time was had by all. I want to thank the folks at the Central City Opera, and I guess the folks at Duh Law School, I suppose I have to thank them too for giving me the opportunity and hoping that they don't listen to this and decide to destroy the videotape. Hopefully, they said they're going to put it on the Central City Opera YouTube page, if there is such a thing. Well, we'll find out about all that. But a good time was had by all. And what was stunning was I was able to quote a couple of Bible verses that even the priest and the priest was shocked, and the Lutheran minister and some of the other folks in the audience were shocked when I quoted a couple of Bible verses where Jesus was less than nice. And they actually challenged me, where are those in the Bible? And I'm like, what, I'm going to make this up in front of all you people? Come on, it's in the Bible. Look it up yourself, I think I might have said. Anyway, so we'll get that out, and if that happens, I'll post that. Now, I made up a brochure before I went over there about the death penalty and mental illness, and I may very well post the text of my brochure on today's show up at theweeklyworldview.com. Because there just weren't enough law students there. I thought there'd be a lot more young students, but there were only a few young law students. And I really wanted them to read my brochure, so I may post the text of that up on the blog today when we put the show up. So check that out. Well, I guess if you're listening to the show, there's a good chance you already checked that out. So thank you for checking it out. And now let's move right on to the news of the day. From the Domestic Tranquility File, Kansas City police announced this Friday past that they have officially linked 12 highway shootings to a serial shooter or shooters in the greater Kansas City area. There are 20 cases of drivers who've been shot or shot at that are currently being investigated by Kansas City police and other police organizations in the surrounding area. A retired FBI agent says that the shootings appear to have no specific target, appear to be random in nature, right there on the highways and byways of the greater Kansas City area. Three victims have actually been shot and wounded so far in the shooting spree that began, the investigation began April 1st, and the shootings have now been linked. Here's what I found interesting about this story, as reported by Fox News. Police have reportedly called the highways around Kansas City safe, and they say that these shootings should not make drivers fearful to take to the highway. To which I ask, well, why not? You say that there's some serial shooter or shooters in, so why should we assume the highways are safe, and why should we not be fearful? Could you maybe clarify that for me? I feel really sorry for the police. They can't find these shooters. But then the politicians insist, well, tell the people everything's okay. Don't be scared. Don't go to the mall, go shopping, go driving. Everything's fine. Just move along. Can you imagine being the police spokesperson who has to stand up and say, despite the fact that we've linked 20 shootings, that the highways are safe and you should not be fearful? I was just in Kansas City, and I may be going back, and well, this gives me pause. Let me just say that. I would not consider the highways safe. And I would be slightly fearful driving through the Kansas City metropolitan area. I'm already usually pretty fearful because it's usually raining and or snowing and the wind is blowing 90 miles an hour. And I don't know where I'm going in Kansas City. So now to worry about being shot at, I don't even know if I can go back. don't know if I can go back until they catch these guys. Man. All right, now, on to the politics file. We all watched the story this week about the range war out there in Nevada, cattle rancher against the Bureau of Land Management. And many of us, me included, had thoughts running through our minds, remembrances of Ruby Ridge and Waco and things like that. And we just wondered, is the government going to do this again, where they're going to actually take armed action against citizens because they simply will not do what the government demands that they do? I was a little nervous all week watching the story. And the government suddenly blinked toward the end of the week. Thank heaven, nobody was hurt seriously. A couple people tasered, a couple people arrested, but nobody shot, nobody killed, nobody burned to death like has happened in the past. And I was really surprised that the government blinked, because they usually don't blink when it comes to a matter of testing their authority. The government tends to, they tend to overreach sometimes. They definitely tend not to back down quietly and scurry away. So why did it happen? Well, I did a little research. I found this story on WorldNet Daily. Back in April of 2012, Bloomberg reported that a Chinese billionaire, founder of the Chinese energy giant ENN Group, had teamed up with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to win incentives, including land 113 miles southeast of Las Vegas, that this Chinese energy group sought to buy for less than an eighth of its assessed value. The Chinese and Harry Reid basically helped this Chinese energy company get a great deal, or at least try to get a great deal on this land. And Bloomberg reported ENN intended to create solar energy farms on the Nevada land. Bloomberg further documented that ENN had contributed over $40,000 to Senator Reid over the past three election cycles. Back in 2012, Breitbart reported that lawyer Rory Reid, the son of Harry Reid, had been appointed the primary representative for the Chinese energy group. Strangely enough, they were ready to build a $5 billion solar plant on a 9,000-acre Clark County desert plot in Lawton, Nevada. WorldNet Daily also reports that a Reuters report published back in August 2012 documented that Harry Reid was recruited by the Chinese Energy Group during a 2011 trip he took to China with nine other U.S. senators, and Harry Reid seems to have been in bed with the Chinese to build this solar energy farm. In fact, Dana Lash, a blogger, wrote, quote, before I say this, you folks know that the BLM says that there's a desert tortoise that they're just trying to protect out there, trying to keep these cows from eating up all this tortoise's forage. The tortoise, you know, don't look over here, folks. Look over here. It's a tortoise. Well, Dana Lash says it's not a tortoise. A tortoise isn't the reason why the Bureau of Land Management is harassing a 67-year-old Nevada rancher. They want his land. Unquote, says Dana Lash. And maybe the deal was done and Harry Reid had already made the promise to these Chinese solar swindlers, and this farmer was just getting in the way, and maybe Harry Reid thought he could push this guy out quietly, and boy, when it came up above the radar, I'm sure Harry called the folks at BLM and all the way up to the White House and everywhere else and said, guys, let's not, please, I love the tortoise as much as the next guy, but please, let's just let this thing pass. And the government bailed out of there. You can't find the BLM agents that were in charge out there with a GPS now. They're just disappeared. They're gone. And I want to thank WorldNet Daily for providing the research so that I did not have to quote InfoWars on the air. Oh, no, I said InfoWars on the air. Try never to do that. But I will admit that this Harry Reid connection was broadly exposed this week on InfoWars, the website of the psychotic lunatic whose name escapes me at the moment. But I'm glad I was able to find this on WorldNet Daily, which is a much more reputable news source. Although they are kind of wacky over there sometimes, too. We'll get to some of that a little bit later. Now we move on to reason number 708 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Houston, Texas, a fifth-grade substitute teacher was suspended early this past week by the Lumberton Independent School District down there in Texas after it was discovered that the teacher was actually a transgendered male. Yeah, that's what they found out, and the school district there in Texas suspended him, her. I'm not sure. Is a transgendered male, does that mean that she became a man or that he was becoming a woman? Do we know? It's very, very murky when you get into these kind of issues, folks. So don't quote me on which way the transition was occurring, only that this teacher was discovered to be transgendered. The issue of Laura Jane Klug's gender identity came up after parents became aware of students talking about it at school. How did they find out? The kids found out, and it became quite the subject of gossip there around the schoolhouse. So Mr. Klug, Laura Jane, Mr. Klug, see, I'm even more confused now, was asked by school officials not to return to her classroom. Okay, I want to thank the folks at Breitbart for putting her in quotation marks. I wonder if they've been listening to the show. I criticized Breitbart recently because they were referring to these gender tranny self-mutilating mentally ill people by their chosen gender. And now, reading this article, I see that the reporters at Breitbart, they put her in quotation marks, which indicates to me that this teacher is a boy. No matter what he, she, it says about itself, it's a boy. Well, school officials, they asked Mr. Klug not to return to her classroom until the school board could be convened to consider the matter. Well, folks, the school board convened later in the week. Now, the male substitute teacher, according to WorldNet Daily, the male substitute teacher making a transition to female has been reinstated to her, his, its position at Lumberton Independent School District right there in the heart of Texas. Klug, the tranny, was elated at the news and posted on his Facebook page, "I am reinstated!" Exclamation point. Now, the superintendent said he had to reinstate Klug after explaining that no decision could be made by the school board because the issue was not on the agenda. And the superintendent insisted that the board needed to, quote, do what is right according to the law, unquote. So even in Texas, often referred to as the last free country on earth, the government school district is extremely confused about what the law is and what should or shouldn't be done when sexual deviants are in charge of the classroom. Number 708, as far as I know. Now, this isn't a perfect chronological, numerological effort here. We don't keep track. Now, I just know that we started back a few years ago with reason 666. And it's probably closer to reason 800, as a matter of fact. I don't know. If you've been following the numbers, maybe you can send me an email and let me know if I've gotten those out of order. But please, if at all humanly possible, folks, take or get your children out of the government schools for that and a variety of other reasons. In fact, the transgendered teachers is one of the least frequent reasons to get your children out of the government schools. What the main reason is the daily indoctrination and inoculation that your children will receive there against the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the main reason. To get your children out of the government schools. To keep your children out of the government schools, if at all humanly possible, please do so. All right. Now we move into the culture file. This is from the New York Post. The New York Post reports that more and more U.S. women are foregoing motherhood and getting their maternal kicks by owning small dogs. Women are choosing small dogs over children. Yes, data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that a big drop in the number of babies born to women ages 15 to 29 corresponds with a huge increase in the number of small dogs owned by U.S. women in that same age demographic. How does that bode for the future of Western civilization? Well, this goes back to my theory from last week that it is quite possible before the flood that God looked over the situation and realized there weren't going to be any more children. Everyone was turning homo or getting themselves fixed or killing their children. And in this case, getting a small dog is certainly not a sin. Absolutely not. Now, would I allow it in my house? No way. I would not. Well, actually, if one of my daughters got me just at the right time and said, "Daddy, Daddy, can we get this puppy dog?" I probably would allow it. But I would still encourage them to grow up, get married, and have children. So anyway, getting tiny dogs is definitely a better option than becoming a slut and getting yourself fixed and going and sleeping around. So I just want to say I've got nothing against women purchasing, owning, and even loving and cuddling, snuggling their small puppies and dogs. But I'm giving you this story so that you understand where we are as a civilization. Sarah Foster, a 30-year-old from Chelsea in New York, an equities trader, she says, quote, "I'd rather have a dog over a kid. My bulldog Maddie brings me more joy than a child," unquote. That's Sarah from Chelsea. "It's just less work, and honestly, I have more time to go out. You know, you don't have to get a babysitter," unquote, said a 30-year-old poster child for the millennial generation, I suppose. The federal data says that over the past 7 years, the number of live births per 1,000 women aged 15 to 29 has plunged 9%. And there's a similar uptick in the number of small dogs owned. By the way, small dogs are defined as under 25 pounds, and I suppose I'm okay with that. I'm not going to argue that. Anyway, the number of these small dogs owned in the United States has skyrocketed from about 34 million back in 2008 to over 40 million in 2012, corresponding with the Barack Obama administration. There's something else we could blame on Obama. A massive increase in dog ownership. Right? He has a small dog, doesn't he? Anyway, let's see. I have another quote from Mary Smith from Murray Hill. She has a 6-month-old French bulldog, and his name is Tolliver, and he brings me as much joy as any baby would. Dogs are better. Look at Tolliver. He's great, except he snores a lot. He even has his own Instagram account. Says Mary Smith. "Hey, listen," she says. "Hey, listen, a dog is easier to transport than a child, and it's less final than having a child." Final. It's less final. I guess it means she doesn't feel like she's actually had to finally grow up. She's 25 years old, and she knows that if she has a kid, she has to start acting like an adult. And if there's anything young people want to do, these days and probably since time immemorial, they simply want to avoid growing up and acting like adults. "It's a less final decision, you see, than having a child. Then I know it's all over." there you go, folks. That's from New York City. The younger generation there in New York and where they're taking the country. Thank heavens there's a country in between the coasts where people are still relatively sane. And they even get married and have children. And they remain their same genders from the day they're born until the day they die. In vast swaths of the country. So don't get too depressed. While these are concerning statistics, especially the plunge in the birth rate, that's not a good thing. But it is not emblematic of the entire country, so we shouldn't get too depressed about it. It's mostly upwardly mobile urban ladies who are foregoing childbirth, and they're going with the puppy dog instead. All right, now, on the other side of the spectrum of sin and wickedness and evil is a story from a man who should not be being reported on right now. This is a story from a person who should be arrested. He should be tried. And if convicted, he should be executed. His name is Joe Francis, and he is the creator of the Girls Gone Wild video series. Now, if you've ever stayed up past 10 o'clock to watch network television, you'll be familiar with the Girls Gone Wild video series and the commercials and all that, right? So we know who Joe Francis is. Well, listen to this from ABC News. They're reporting that Joe Francis, creator of Girls Gone Wild, and his girlfriend Abby are expecting twin girls. And that's just how they planned it, reports ABC. That's right, the couple say that they knew they wanted girls. They knew exactly what they wanted, as a matter of fact, so that's exactly what they did. The couple chose to use in vitro fertilization and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis to eliminate genetic diseases and to have only two female fraternal twins. They designed the babies exactly like they wanted them. By the way, when this couple says that they used pre-implantation genetic diagnosis to eliminate genetic diseases, what that really means is they used it to kill people. Because they fertilized their eggs and they created these embryos, and at the point when they found out they were boys, they killed them. When they found out they had some kind of disease or imperfection or genetic string of code that indicated they may be prone to a certain type of disease or disorder or malady, they killed them. So not only is this guy a pornographer, he's also now an outspoken, proud murderer of innocent boys and probably girls too. Yeah, Francis proudly told ABC News, quote, "You can screen out over 1,700 genetic diseases, and you can kill the people you consider less than perfect." Well, I added that last part because he might not even realize the full extent of what he's doing, because he's just a heathen pornographer. What could we expect from him? Him and his girlfriend, Abby, screening out, killing the imperfect so that they can have exactly what they want. ABC reports that Francis and Wilson chose girls. They could easily have said that they killed the boys, but they didn't say that in this article. It's a smiley entertainment type article. It's all shiny and glittery and nice and fun in Hollywood. ABC interviewed folks over at the Fertility Institutes, and they say that a couple can select a baby's gender with 99.9% accuracy, and that this gender selection procedure costs upwards of $20,000. Can you believe this is being reported in a happy Hollywood story here on ABC? This is Nazi-esque gender selection and killing of innocent people because of their sex. And they report it in an entertainment blog here on ABC. Francis said the process has been eased by all the advice he's gotten from his friends who already have had children, such as the Kardashians. Obviously, the Kardashians being a font of wisdom and cultural knowledge, especially regarding procreation. Unbelievable. ABC asked him, the reporter asked him if having girls has changed his outlook on his Girls Gone Wild franchise. And he said, no, it hasn't. Not really. I have no idea. I don't know if the Girls Gone Wild franchise still exists. I see no reason why it would have gone away. He says, no, the girls haven't been born yet, so I'm still a smut peddler. Now, why should he change his mind about girls if he has girls? I mean, after all, now he's a proud, outspoken murderer. Why should he feel any guilt about being a smut peddler? You think this guy is capable of feeling guilt about anyone? He's made a living. He's made a living taking advantage of drunk girls on college campuses and videotaping them. And that's how he's made a very lucrative living, I'm sure he's made. So I wouldn't expect him to feel any guilt. I am a little shocked that a story like this could be reported on the ABC News entertainment section, and I haven't heard anyone in the conservative media comment on it all week. Although I've got to admit, I don't listen to much of the conservative media anymore because I find it far too left-wing, far too ignorant and vacuous, and it's very hard for me to be entertained by people who are talking about things that I consider peripheral to the to the real issues, an issue like this, an issue of life and death being brazenly advertised. These people are proud of what they're what they've done, and they're proud to tell you how much they spent to do it, to murder these people. And I find it hard to listen to talk show hosts talking about the vagaries of Obamacare and everything else. So maybe I'm just not up to speed, and maybe there was a cohort of conservative talk show hosts who reported on this shocking story. But I'm guessing you probably heard it here first. Thank you very much. We're back here. It's the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you aboard as we report on the events of the week, I suppose. Through the lens of original thought, very disturbing to know that this kind of stuff is going on in our midst. And, it's not surprising. With the state of the culture and the moral decline, check this out. From CNS News, up in Oregon, Planned Parenthood has sponsored in the town of Seaside, Oregon, the Seaside Adolescent Sexuality Conference, sponsored by Planned Parenthood, Bayer Pharmaceuticals, and the Cascade AIDS Project. Cascade. Why? The homos are always involved in everything sexually deviant, even when it's heterosexual deviancy. So my position is anyone who advertises an event called Adolescent Sexuality Conference, that person should be immediately arrested. I said arrested. And put on trial for corruption of the youth or some similar charge. And beaten within an inch of their life, and if they ever do it again, they should be executed for it. There is no reason in public to discuss adolescent sexuality. That's something that can and may be discussed between parents and adolescents within their own family. It's certainly not a topic for public discussion. So all the people I'm about to report on should be in jail right now. numerous government agencies, including the Oregon Attorney General, the Oregon Department of Education, the Oregon Department of Human Services, the Oregon Health Authority, and the Oregon Teen Pregnancy Task Force, came together to sponsor the event. Yeah, so these people are not going to be arrested. Why? Because the Oregon Attorney General was one of the sponsors. The person who should be in charge of prosecuting these perverts was actually a part of the program. All right, so we're going to throw out any hope that any of these people will be arrested, as they should be. The conference, according to CNS News, is a long-standing tradition in Seaside, Oregon, and about 30% of the attendees are children unaccompanied by their parents at an event called Adolescent Sexuality Conference. Can you believe this? Of course you can believe it. This is the state of our civilization. And now you wonder, I wonder why these governing officials and departments would be involved in promoting promiscuity is basically what they're involved in. They're promoting promiscuity. And it confuses me as to why, what's in it for the government? What's in it for all these bureaucrats? And all I can think of is they want a chance at some of these young kids. That's what I think. Now, why would Planned Parenthood be involved? Well, it's obvious. This is their market. They're trying to ensure that their pipeline is full, so to speak. Bayer Pharmaceuticals, you might wonder, why would Bayer Pharmaceuticals, aren't they the aspirin people? Well, they were the aspirin people 100 years ago, but they're not just the aspirin people anymore. Bayer Pharmaceuticals, They manufacture something called LARCs. And these are long-acting reversible contraception devices, one of them being the Mirena IUD. That's their flagship brand in the teenage promiscuity market. They've been very successful with that financially. The Mirena IUD is manufactured by Bayer Pharmaceuticals, and they were there promoting long-acting reversible contraceptive. And then, of course, the Cascade AIDS Project. Anytime anyone's talking about anything to do with sex, you can bet there's going to be a pile of homos somewhere close by. So, the Attorney General of Oregon, instead of prosecuting these perverts, hell-bent on corrupting your children and mine, by the way, just because you're not in Seaside, Oregon, does not mean you are not threatened by this, and that your teenage daughter is not in the crosshairs of these deviant perverts. They're out there every day in the schools and on the TV and on iTunes and in the music and everywhere else. They're out to get their hooks into your kids. That's why the walls here at the McBurney compound will be a little higher this year, and the moat will be a little bit deeper this summer around the McBurney compound. All right. What's that? Drawbridge. We're pulling up the drawbridge this summer around the McBurney compound. All right. Now, let's move on into the personhood file. If you've been a supporter of personhood or you've paid attention to the topic at all over the past, let's see, since 07, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, those 7 years, if you've paid attention as I have, you'll note that our adversaries report that what we want to do in giving personhood rights to unborn children, even at the earliest stages of biological development, what we'll do is it's a threat to women. It's a threat. We're going to have women being prosecuted for when they have a miscarriage. You're going to prosecute women for miscarriages. You're going to prosecute women for taking any kind of risk with their body. Is that what's going to happen? Right? They scare all these people with these straw men. Well, listen to this story from The Independent over in the United Kingdom. A report from South Carolina. Yeah, well, it's from The Independent. What can I? I don't know why the British newspapers seem to always have these stories before the Americans. A South Carolina woman who killed her baby daughter by giving her what prosecutors say was a fatal dose of morphine through her breast milk has been jailed for 20 years. 6-week-old Alexis died of respiratory failure in November of 2010. A toxicology report found a level of morphine in the child's body that pathologists say would have been lethal even for an adult. Prosecutors alleged that the mother was taking painkillers while she was pregnant and had obtained the prescription drugs by concealing her pregnancy from doctors. This same mom had lost her nursing license about 10 years ago for trying to get drugs illegally. So here we have a drug-addicted mother. She's on painkiller pills because she's got an addiction. And she gets pregnant. And being unable to control herself, she continues taking drugs until it presents a clear and present danger to her child and eventually even kills that baby. And this woman was prosecuted. Now, this baby died after it was born, and that was the only reason that this mother was prosecuted. It was because this baby was actually born and was breastfeeding at the time. But The Independent reports that besides this case, no mother has ever been prosecuted in the United States for killing her child through a substance transmitted in her breast milk. Never happened before. This is the very first case. And so those of you who throw up the straw men that what we're doing is giving unborn children undue rights that would put the liberty of their mothers at risk, well, this is the first case of something like this happening. And how many women were prosecuted for miscarriages before abortion was legalized? How many? That's right, none. Never, ever. So it's a total straw man. And I think justice was not done in this case. Obviously, I think this anytime anyone murders an innocent person, that person should be put to death, as I made clear at the DU panel this past week. But at least some measure of justice was attempted in this case, because this mother, through her own negligence and recklessness, killed her baby. And she should have been prosecuted. And of course, changing the law to acknowledge the God-given personhood of every innocent child isn't going to give anyone any more rights than they deserve. All human beings deserve equal rights before the law, and of course we all deserve the right to life. All right, more from the personhood file. A story from Breitbart off their big government page. The New York Post has reported that the documents they examined show that New York City's tanning salons are inspected more regularly than New York City's abortion clinics. That's right. According to the Post, health inspectors regulate 25 diagnostic and treatment centers and surgery centers in New York that provide abortion services. Of these 25, 8 were never inspected. Between 2000 and 2012, 5 were inspected just once. 8 were inspected only once, twice, or 3 times during that same 12-year period. By contrast, tanning salons are required to be inspected annually by regulators there in New York City. So I'm a bit nonplussed at this article. This is some pro-life organization spent a lot of time and effort to expose the fact that tanning salons are inspected more often on a regular basis than abortion clinics in New York City. And I'm sorry, it's really immaterial to me, because I don't want a well-regulated, clean, tidy, child-killing industry. That's really not what I want. Now, this doesn't surprise me at all, because murder is a dirty business. Tanning, on the other hand, is a bit of a strange business, but killing children is a dirty, filthy, evil, dark, black business. So one would expect that when it comes to following the letter of the law for health inspections, that these people who butcher children probably flout the rules a little bit more than in other industries. But I don't want a clean, neat, tidy, sterile child-killing industry. It has to be abolished. It has to be abolished. I'm willing to debate on the tanning salons. I'm not necessarily a fan, but I'm willing to debate regulation of tanning salons. I am not willing to debate the regulation of child murder facilities. I'm sorry. They need to be abolished and bulldozed. That's all. Not inspected, not regulated, not cleaned, and not up to ambulatory surgical standards. They need to be demolished. Everyone in them needs to be arrested. All right. So there we have that. And now we'll go to the Pope in the strange religion file from Vatican City, from LifeSite News. The Pope said in a recent speech that human life is, quote, sacred and inviolable, and that every civil law is based on the recognition of the first and most fundamental right, the right to life. That is, Pope Francis said that in a speech to an Italian pro-life organization last week. He also said, quote, it is therefore necessary to reiterate the strongest opposition to any direct attack on life, especially innocent and defenseless. And the woman's unborn child in the womb is the innocent par excellence, unquote, said the Pope. He also said, if you look at life as something that is consumed, it will also be something that sooner or later you can throw away with abortion to begin with, said Pope Francis. He said, human life, however, is, quote, a gift from God, unquote, said the Pope. Then, for no reason whatsoever that I can figure out, Pope Francis took the opportunity to link the pro-life message of the church to his critique of the global capitalist economy. Yes. Now, let me just ask you, in any of the Pope's communist meanderings of late, well, let's say over the past 6 months, when the Pope has come out as pretty much a communist, has he ever linked that to the argument against killing innocent children? I don't think so. But the Pope couldn't help himself. He's on a good pope role here, standing up for innocent life, as a good pope would be expected to do. But then for some reason, he has to add on to the end of it, quote, this economy kills. It considers the human being in himself as a commodity that you can use and then throw away, unquote. And that's why this landed in the strange religion file. This pope has created a new file at the Weekly Worldview called the Strange Religion File. Because when the pope says something that I agree with, I'm ready to stand up and applaud and give the pope credit. But when he veers back into communism, I've got to scratch my head and wondering what's going on and what strange religion is this pope? I'm the man who holds our places. Must be the ones who start. Worldview, I am your host, Doug McBurney, here in the bowels of the McBurney compound, along with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Glad to have you back for another week as we round third and head for home. We dive now from the strange religion file down deep into the bowels of the bad religion file. That bad religion being communism. I have a report here that was sent to me by one of my crack staff researchers up in Alaska. He sent me this story from TeaLeafNation.com. It's a report on China. And what's so funny about that? Tea Leaf Nation. Yeah. They're a fine organization, I'm sure. But this is from the bad religion file, communism being one of the bad religions of the world. Weibo. Have you heard of Weibo? Weibo is China's Twitter-like social media platform where people go to speak their mind. And Weibo search results tallies are subject to the daily exigencies of both user trends and the actions of censors. So in China, their Twitter feed is, it's a combination of what's actually happening and what the Chinese censors are able to squelch and put out. And so a Christian organization has been monitoring the Weibo feed, the social media platform there in China, and search results on the platform conducted just this past April 3rd, a search for the word Bible yielded over 17 million recent results, while a search for the quotations of Chairman Mao clocked just 60,000 mentions. So the Bible, 17 million. Mao's Little Red Book, fewer than 60,000. Christian congregation, as a search term, was mentioned over 40 million times, but the Communist Party, as a search term, that had just over 5 million mentions. So 40 million for the good guys, 5 million for the evil dark forces of communism. More from the Chinese version of Twitter. The Chinese president, Xi Jinping, he got about 4 million Weibo mentions. Compare this to Jesus. In the same time period, he got over 18 million mentions. So Jesus is whooping up on the communists on social media over there in China, which is very encouraging. Christianity, according to Tea Leaf Nation reporter, he says Christianity has grown rapidly in China for more than two decades. And while official government estimates put the total number of Chinese Christians at 25 million, many outside observers agree that the estimates, the real number, may be closer to 60 million Christians in China. Out of what do they have there now? Like 1.2 billion people? More? 60 million. That's still not a whole lot of percentage-wise, but 60 million is an awful lot of Christians. So forget the Cold War. forget the coming war with China. Forget the clash with China. Perhaps China will be destroyed. Their bad religion will be consumed from within by good religion when the Christians finally have their voice heard in China. Let's hope so, and I pray for that every day for the people who are trying to teach the world about Jesus Christ, and especially for our brothers and sisters in China. Now, let's go to deeper into the bad religion file. It's a thick file this week. It gets deeper and darker. This story is from the religion blog over at CNN, one of the most irreligious, godless religion blogs on the internet. If you're at CNN and you want to report on religion, I think the one qualifier in the job interview is that you cannot actually believe in God. You can't be the editor of the CNN blog if you're actually a Christian. From CNN, for the next 12 months, a fellow named Pastor Ryan Bell has sworn to live as if there was no God. Now, this fella says he's a pastor, and he's engaged in what he calls an intellectual experiment. He began at the beginning of this year, and the seeds of this experiment were planted last March, back in 2013, when he was asked to resign as... Now, he's going to live as if he's not a believer in God for a year. He's a pastor. He's a theologian, maybe, even. He's going to live as if there is no God. The seeds of his journey, according to CNN, were planted last March when he was asked to resign as pastor of a Seventh-day Adventist congregation. And that was last March. Why was he asked to leave? He was advocating for the church to allow homosexuals in the leadership. So he was already living as if there is no God. I mean, what is this? This is now a social experiment? Anyway, so he's a homosexual activist. He had been basically been kicked out of his church. And apparently in less than a week, he lost two jobs teaching at a Christian school, teaching at two different Christian schools. And he got asked to leave as the pastor of a church. He was kicked out. He's 42 years old, and he's been a pastor or in seminary for most of his adult life. And now he says he faces the prospect of poverty and taking odd jobs to feed his daughters and his family. But, CNN notes, he's found help from an unlikely source. Atheists. Atheists are pitching in to help the pastor who says he's going broke. A prominent atheist blogger named Hemant Mehta set up an online fundraiser for this godless pastor. And I don't mean that just in the sense of his experiment. He's just a godless pastor. Well, this atheist set up an online fundraiser and in one day raised $19,000 to help the pastor giving atheism a try. And so what does Pastor Bell have to say about this? He says, this really validates that the atheist community is really all about the search for the truth. They know that I might not even end up as an atheist at the end of my search, but it doesn't matter to them. It's such a beautiful gesture. All right, so I'm not buying that this guy is any kind of Christian. He got kicked out of his church, so now he's trying to do something to raise enough money to make... He got kicked out of his church for being godless. Being Antichrist, basically. But, of course, CNN, they don't recognize what a Christian is and what isn't. So the story gets by the editors there. And dress up the atheists and make them look good. All right, more from the bad religion file. There's been quite a buzz in the scholarly world of the Bible and archaeology. This is, again, from the CNN blog, the religion blog. They say there's a big buzz in Bible and archaeology over the discovery of the oldest known Mesopotamian version of the flood story. Anyone familiar with the flood story who's gone to college, you'll know that the first day you get into college, the first thing they tell you is that there's a ton of flood stories. They're everywhere. Every civilization had flood stories. In fact, we have documents that predate anything written by Moses about the flood. And they're right. There's lots of flood stories everywhere, and the archaeological evidence is actually older than any of the parchments we have of the Bible. It's true, there's flood stories everywhere. So what's been recently found is a 4,000-year-old cuneiform tablet from what is now Iraq. The newly decoded cuneiform tells of a divinely sent flood and a sole survivor on an ark, like so many of the flood stories from the Epic of Gilgamesh on to all kinds of... Virtually every civilization... of any import has a flood story if you go back far enough. But CNN reports there's one major difference in this one. They say in this version, the ark is round. Yes, it's round. So why does this new discovery matter, CNN asks. Well, it matters, says CNN, because it serves as a reminder that the story of the flood wasn't set in stone from its earliest versions to its latest incarnation. The people who wrote down the flood narrative weren't reporting on a historical event for which they had to get their facts straight, like what shape the ark was. No. That's why this is just a story. Yeah. The real reason CNN finds this new archaeological discovery important is because it really helps the heathens to validate their unbelief. They love to find any story that disagrees with the biblical account so they can validate their own heathenism. CNN also reports the Mesopotamian version features many gods, whereas the biblical account features only one. I would think that would be a bigger difference than what the shape of the ark was. But that's just me. But yeah, and I'm a theologian. You can ask the faculty there at DU. Now, the Mesopotamian versions, according to CNN, tell us that the flood came because the humans were too noisy for the gods. Now, the biblical account says it was because violence had spread over all the earth and every thought in the mind of man was only evil continually. That's what the Bible says. And CNN concludes its report by saying neither version is right or wrong. They are, rather, both appropriate to the culture that produced them. Neither is history. Both are theology. At which CNN snickers at that. It's just theology. I mean, you can't take that seriously. Anyway, folks, and I'll tell this to the reporters over there at the CNN religion blog. When you find the place where history and theology intersect with facts, then you have found the truth. Then you have found the truth. And there is such a thing as truth, despite the bent of the CNN religion blog. There is such a thing as truth. All right, now, we're almost out of time. We are definitely almost out of time. Update on marijuana sales in Colorado. Tax revenue on recreational dope is 13% below state estimates. They're falling $500,000 short. And here's what the CBS reporter in Denver says. We're not seeing the number of individuals using recreational marijuana that everybody originally thought we would. Actually, there's just as many people using it, you moron, but they're just not paying the taxes, okay? In fact, there's more people using it because now it's legal. There's more people using it, but they're just not buying it at the store and paying the taxes, just like I said. The government says that they're not going to spend the money they budgeted. See, they budgeted for $50 million, I think. No. Yeah, they budgeted for $54 million. That's what John Hickenlooper put in the budget. He thought that money would come in from his dope dealing business. Well, it's only $20 million so far, so it doesn't look like they're going to fall significantly short. And the Colorado government has said that I've got a quote here from someone in charge of this tax money. I think it's prudent and responsible policy for us to spend these monies in arrears, looking at last year's actual collection. So the government of Colorado says they won't spend the money that they don't have, except this year. They're going to go ahead with this year's budget and spend that money. But after that, they're going to start looking at actually how much money comes in from their dope dealing business before they spend the money. I don't know that they've ever done that with any budget or any tax revenue source. But apparently they say they're going to do that. One state legislator says that his committee plans to spend much of the money on prevention programs and to protect kids. He doesn't say what the programs are going to prevent or what exactly we're going to be protecting kids from, but don't worry. The money that they're going to spend this year, whether it comes in or not from the dope dealing business, it's going to be on prevention programs and to protect kids, so we can all feel good about that, and we can hope that more potheads will actually get in line and pay the taxes, because after all, it is for the children. right? It, I mean, that's what he just said. It is for the children. All right, now, Mike Huckabee. There's some about Mike Huckabee I don't like, and I can't put my finger on it. I got asked at lunch for specifics, and there are a few specific things, and I wasn't able to come up with this, but I had this story in my stack. Mike Huckabee on Tuesday was in Iowa, as you can well imagine. He was at the Fake and Fairly Dumb Coalition Spring Fundraiser. That's the Faith and Freedom Coalition. I call them the Fake and Fairly Dumb Coalition. At their spring fundraiser, and he was defending his opposition to same-sex marriage. And he said, I'm not a hater. He said, I'm not homophobic. Here's what Mike Huckabee says. He said, this issue for me is not about the right side or the wrong side of history. This is the right side of the Bible. And unless God rewrites it, edits it, sends it down with his signature on it, it's not my book to change. So here's the thing about Mike Huckabee that just leaves me just a little uncomfortable, is that to even imply that God might rewrite it or edit it or send it down with his signature and change it, just, I don't know, Mike. I'm just not buying that you're some kind of Christian pastor. And whatever it is your whole shtick is, Mr. Huckabee, I'm just not buying it. And I'm gonna try and do some more research to find out exactly why I'm so uncomfortable with Mike Huckabee. And I'll hope to report on that in the coming weeks. Let's go to San Antonio. Mega Church Pastor John Hagee has announced the Blood Moons, and that there's world-shaking events are going to happen between April 2014, October 2015. He says four blood moons, a rare astronomical event of four consecutive and complete lunar eclipses known as a tetrad, which begins April 15th. And he says the world is going to shake with events. Is it the end of the age? He asked his flock during a sermon. Right around the time he was releasing a book on the blood moons. It's happening, I think, in the next couple days. It should be really neat. I want to take my girls out and show them the blood moon because it's really cool. Well, this tetrad of blood moons just happens to coincide with four Jewish holidays. And I like John Hagee. He's saying it could be the end of the world. He's got all these. Yeah, I love John Hagee, but he's becoming more and more of an end-time profiteer. And folks, there is a temptation when you are a theologian or you have some knowledge of the Bible to take advantage of people's fears about the end times. And so John Hagee's just doing that too much, and I don't like it. By the way, the Jewish calendar is a lunar and a sun-based calendar. So it's not surprising that these blood moons would coincide with Jewish festivals. This is just not that unusual, Mr. Hagee. Now, the music has run out, and I'm not done with Mr. Hagee. Well, which world-shaking event that occurs over the next 18 months will John Hagee's acolytes point to shore up his credibility so that the next time he gins up a book about the end times, which will be 2 or 3 years from now, that he can sell a bunch of those books? In 2012... He said his sermon was entitled, Could 2012 Be the End of the World as We Know It? Said John Hagee. Well, of course it could be, John, but it wasn't. But people still buy his books. I wonder which world-shaking event they point to in 2012. Because the world didn't end, but John Hagee's still publishing books. And it's just fairly embarrassing, especially here in the theologian community, of which I've been made an honorary member. Been made an honorary member of the theologian community, and I don't appreciate John with his issues. All right, we're just going to roll the music again just a little bit here because it is the end of the show, and I want to thank my friends at at KGOV.com, KGOV.com, where you can hear me guest host with Bob Inyart regularly. My friends at Denver Bible Church and American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Darren, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.